Whoa! You spit.
Ah!
Isn't the drink of the suitor so that the suitor will fall in love with you? Brian, I have never done that for you.
You just have to spit it with intention.
The drop of the liquid from the heart of the banana.
Yes.
During midnight. Under this definition. Yes.
Bulletproof talismanic shirts.
Talismanic shirts. So not Kevlar, but Latin prayers.
I love it. So what I would like to see is a transformation sequence of a Kalinga warrior.
Yes.
Right? Putting in all of these armaments, magical anime style.
Yeah. Another weird agimat you can get is enchanted edible mud.
Explain this more. That's it. It's a rainy,
cozy,
day.
Thundery, blustery day for the Gods Must Be Crazy podcast.
Welcome to our podcast. I'm Ice.
I'm Anima.
And this is the Gods Must Be Crazy. It's a podcast on Philippine mythology and folklore. And today we are covering a very exciting topic.
Yes!
A topic that we, from the very first time we started the podcast, we wanted to do, but apparently there's a lot of research involved.
Oh my gosh, yes. I finally got off my ass and did the research.
And so we're covering
agimats, anting-anting, or the talismans of Filipino culture. And
whoa. Sorry. I don't know if the thunder
picked
clap
up.
Registered, but
oh my god. And it's quite fitting that we're doing it right now. We're not gonna air it immediately after, but we're currently filming on the day after Palm Sunday. So it's Palm Monday. And this is, I'll talk about it later, but one of the more or most important weeks of the year for those who believe in anting-antings or agimats.
Holy Week.
Holy Week, yes. It's an important week.
Huh.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'll tell you why later. But first, let's jump in. Well, I wanted to give a little bit of background of why it took me so long. But also, I'm not sure that all of the research I did is going to fit into one episode. So this might be a two-parter because we travel from all the way from the origins to pre-colonial, to colonial times, to modern day, and to like modern day how-tos for agimats and anting-antings. So like I said, this episode was really dense. And from what I can see, we're going to have to cut it up in two parts. So consider this part one of our anting-anting, agimat, and talisman episode. It's such a rich and storied background, but surprisingly,
like modern Philippine witchcraft or something like that.
And it's funny because there's not a lot about it in textbooks. And there are very, very few books about it. And it's more, I would say it's more in the folklore realm than it is in the mythology realm. So let me just dive in. I have my research here. So agimat is what we call it. It's also known as anting-anting. It's the Filipino word for amulet or charm. So anting-anting is not just the thing, but the system of
what
it.
What does the word mean?
Well, like, I'll tell you. Okay. But first, anting-anting includes the talismans itself, the amulets, and the charms. Charms usually is a thing or a spell. And other general terms for it are also, so anting-anting is also agimat, also bertud, or galing. Galing, which is, galing is also like talent, right? And it's other people, which I'll talk about later on. So it is actually part of Southeast Asian tradition of tribal jewelry, it's called. The word is from gantung.
It means it's usually jewelry.
Usually jewelry, yes. But it's also many, many other things. It's something you wear. So gantung is the word it seems to come from. It means hanging in Indonesian or Malay. And anting-anting actually means ear pendant in Javanese. Like an earring, an ear pendant. An ear pendant is like you wear it It's like, essentially, it's a necklace around your ear. It's not a
earring. So you don't pierce your ear. You wear it around.
Like a face mask style. Around your ear.
I'm laughing, but that's actually a great way
It's like, how do you put it on your ear? Like a face mask.
Like behind your ear, yeah. And then it hangs from the back.
Yes, and it's like a pendant.
And then they usually have like lucky charms, basically.
Yes.
That they use. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Imbued things. So in the occult tradition, this is great. There's a corresponding agima to deal with particular areas.
Okay,
so it's need based. It's a need based thing. So
who makes it?
Different people.
Okay.
So the frequent types of agima are used. So it could be religious or spiritual leader, but it could also be a hero. A hero can make an agima. Mm. And I have examples.
Like the Lam'ang story.
Lam'ang will feature.
Okay.
Lam'ang will feature very specially in this episode as well. So we'll do a call back to Lam'ang. So there are different types. The most frequent ones are for protection and removing hexes and exorcism of evil spirits. And so one thing for me that was eye-opening for Agimat and Anting-Anting is it's not offensive. It's very passive and defensive.
Uh-huh.
Which is, that's interesting for me because it's not, even if warriors use it and stuff, it's like your power is your own. Your offensive power is your own. And the only time you need an anting-anting or a gimmick is protection.
Is it usually against like supernatural forces?
Could be, but also other humans.
Okay.
So there's so many. There's so many you can get. Okay. So the only offensive, quote-unquote, agimat I saw is a gayuma.
Gayuma, which is
a love potion. It's a large
gayuma
charm.
Gayuma is only for love.
Yes, only for love. And so gayuma can be a charm, but it's also a spell. And so I think gayuma in itself is another like far-reaching thing. But like one of the gayumas is like, if you're serving a drink to like a suitor, you spit. Isn't the drink of the suitor so that the suitor will fall in love with you. Brian, I have never done that for you. Never.
Shane, I've never done that.
Yes, just to
or
show.
Or maybe they have. We don't know. Just kidding. Ew, wait. So so if you spit, and there's nothing else you have to do. You just have to spit it with intention.
I guess with all things, it has to be an intention. So the most commonly known agimat, and this was for me one of the challenges I had at the start, was very Catholic-tinged agimats and anting-anting. So they're usually a cross or a pendant, a medallion of some sort, of some saint. So a lot of the agimats that exist today are Catholic-tinged.
Isn't that the same idea with like relics?
Yeah.
Right? Like this is a piece of the shroud of Saint Andrew or something
and
then you put it in
relicarios,
this,
yeah.
Like this giant like crucifix
Or like the tooth of the saint.
A piece of hair of whoever.
A mummy shroud.
Which like no one can verify, it's just certified.
It's just a belief. Yeah, and there's a lot of examples of that here also.
You know what's stuck in my head right now?
What?
The potion number 9. Did you watch that movie?
I did, yes. So the non-religious ones are many different things. My favorite is, I saw a photo of this, but it just looks like a piece of glass. It's an enchanted stone that came from the sky. And it's called a pangil ng kidlat. Fang of lightning.
Lightning.
So it's like usually a stone. I thought it would be like, you know, glass, like beach glass when lightning strikes the beach.
Sweet Home Alabama.
Like Sweet Home Alabama. No, it was not like that. It's just a rock that looks kind of like a fan. And then this one is the drop of a... This one I've heard a lot about, but I hadn't read about. The drop of the liquid from the heart of the banana during midnight.
Wow.
I'm thinking it's like a sap. Thing. It's called. I sorry, not
or
thing,
just
no,
do.
Do no, it has to come from inside the heart of the banana.
Okay,
it's called a mutya, and you eat it. You ingest it, for depending on the intention, on the power, right? So the gimat is accompanied most of the time with a small book of incantations. So the spell that has to be read during Good Friday.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Several questions, but maybe you'll get into them.
Yes.
Are anting and things and agimats different throughout different regions? Like, do people practice or use it differently in different regions around the Philippines?
Yes, differently and commonly.
Sorry, what?
So there are common traditions from where Lamang was, okay, all the way to the Deep South.
Okay.
And then there are different things, like different types of objects to protect.
And this practice of, like, it's a lot of it links with, like, church objects, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because that was introduced that way, or it was just like a natural assimilation
thing? It was an assimilation.
Okay.
So when the and I'll get into it too. So when the Spanish came in, they note in the Boxer Codex, if you remember, they noticed right away that they were having this talismanic practice, and they were like, great, let's just leverage that. And, you know,
it's an easy way to earn money from locals.
Yeah. And you can say, like, oh, that God that you're praying to the ancestor, he's actually St. Francis.
Yeah, that's St. Bridget. For animals, or, you know. Whatever.
And so
yeah,
wear the St. Francis medallion. Mm. So they just took it. They were very observant and they noticed it right away. So that's that portion. So let's dive in on the different portions. Did you have another question?
No, that's it. Okay. Those are the two questions.
So why do you do it on Good Friday?
Okay.
Do you know why? Can you guess?
Because that is when, I'm gonna guess, based on the Encanto episode, that is when, like, the veil is closed or Jesus is dead.
Yes.
So then other spirits can come around.
In. Yes.
And because he's not guarding the world or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly. Which for me is weird.
Because remember when we talked about the Encanto yes. episode, what do we call it? Stop right now, thank you very yes. much. Basically, that is when that is when Albularius, for example.
Yes. Or witch doctors, yeah,
would kind of charge. Refresh their powers and recharge their powers, and they would call on the Encantos.
Yes, to
they
come
would,
in.
They would give offerings in the forest, in yeah. the caves, because I guess the Encantos were more powerful
yeah.
at that time.
I think it's also very similar to the belief of Samhain, which is mm-hmm. Halloween in but Irish culture, which is the veil is thin.
I love the idea of this only because it's very subversive, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it's not like the power is coming from this Christian God that mm-hmm. came in that, and it is, let's go when he is weakest.
I think it's because of the ownership of, like, okay, oh, you told me it's the same person? Well, my person, my God, my Encantos are powerful before you guys came.
But they don't consider it black magic.
No.
Right?
No.
It's really just a different kind.
The Spanish said it was black magic. Mm-hmm. But when you get it, when you get the agimats and the talismans, they're prayers to Infinito Dios. Infinito Dios is the ultimate God, who they said is also Bathala. So for them, for the Filipinos, we're just praying to the same God as you are. And so palakasan na lang tayo ng prayer. Or let's see who God loves most or who God will listen
to most.
It's
like this thing where, you know, in Japan with the Shinto temples, you yes. kind of just leave behind prayers in yeah. the temple. It's like that thing, but like opposite practice, where you take something
yeah.
that reminds you that I requested for this assistance yes. in some way. And it's your physical reminder.
Yes.
Right?
Speaking of weird physical reminders.
Mm.
Agimats can also be taking the form of clothing.
Ah!
So, like, there are sandals, like wife beaters, like vests.
Camisetas.
That have writing on it. writing
have
and magic
seen
words.
Those?
I probably showed you a photo in the You Shall Be As God's book.
What's that movie? Blue Sang Itim?
No, that's different! No, there's no writing in that. Blue Sang Itim was this fantastic movie back in the day where ugly Snooki Serna. Snooki Serna.
Right.
She was ugly and hunched back and everything. And then if she wore...
She was deformed or
yeah,
something.
And if she wore the... She had a unibrow and a mole. And so when she wore the... And frizzy hair.
Because that's what it takes to make a beautiful person look
ugly. Snooki Serna was gorgeous. And then when she would wear the blusang itim, I guess it was kind some kind of ugly mat.
Meaning black blouse.
Yeah. Yeah. She would become this beautiful...
Yeah, because there was a spell yeah, on the blouse. Except that it was...
Then I rescind. I said, yes. I will say, yes, it is like Blue Sang Itim. Blue Sang Itim is an agimat under this definition.
Oh, yes. This is so funny.
Another weird agimat you can get is enchanted edible mud.
explain I don't, this
that's
more.
It. That's all the context that I have. And then, of course, before this...
No. What do you mean, edible mud? Maybe.
Well, later you'll see. I have examples.
A high five.
wait. There's movies. Another. So before the Spanish came, there were also like I said, antingatings and from the indigenous peoples. So it's depending on what was around them. So Bukidnon people have made shell, bone, and boar tusks, agimats. Kalinga had like rooster feathers. And it depends on the purpose. So, ew. And this is the grossest one. Are you ready? This is kind of gross. Other methods of obtaining an agimat is getting the liquid that is drained from the exhumed body of an unbaptized child or aborted fetus.
Again, what?
You get the liquid from an exhumed body of an unbaptized child or an aborted fetus.
Okay. Yuck. Ugh. What is it supposed to do?
Give you power of invincibility or wealth.
Remember,
like the Toyol!
But remember the death practices episode where you
drain the liquid.
You drain the liquid from the mummy. Body. Yeah, the exhumed body. And then you dip your bread in it.
To get their qualities.
Yeah, that's supposed to like imbibe you with the strength and the wisdom of whoever you're dipping into.
The timing also is Holy Wednesday or Holy Thursday.
It's when you make.
Yeah, when you make it. Holy Thursday and Holy Wednesday was when Jesus was being whipped and crowned with thorns.
So, sorry. So, what's the difference? So, Holy Wednesday and Thursday, what do you do versus Good Friday?
You get the liquid from the aborted fetus.
Ah. And then Good Friday is when you make.
When you recharge the prayers.
And you activate the agimats and the antingatings. Mm-hmm. Okay, clear.
So, how do you...
So, we should activate our...
Agimats.
Our agimats.
On Friday, exactly. I'll give you the how-to.
Okay.
There's like a how-to. We didn't have a booklet that came with our agimats. We bought some agimats.
So FYI, there's this random plug. It's not sponsored. But we both got these really cool agimats from this brand called Angkan World.
Mm-hmm.
You can find them on Instagram. They're really cool. And, well, we bought them. I didn't know you had to, like, activate them or anything.
Yes, you do.
So apparently there's this like whole ceremony.
We have to do
whatever.
The ceremony on Friday. And okay. We'll charge them.
So give me the instructions.
I will. So these amulets, like the one we got, have inscriptions on them. And they are bastardized Latin inscriptions. And they are sold like online, but also in churches, particularly in the courtyard of Quiapo Church.
In churches or around churches?
Around churches. Yep. And then, during the revolutionary time, Filipino freedom fighters, rebels, or tulisans were known to wear anting-anting against the Spaniards and Americans. And later on, I have a short story, which I think has been one of the best short stories I've read that was written in 1901, early 1900s.
It's a very specific category.
Because stories written around that time are very... It's a certain way. It's like you have to get into it, really. This guy wrote this story as if he was Ray Bradbury.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Twilight Zone element to it. So I really, really enjoyed it.
So it's like a speculative fiction type.
Kind of. There's irony.
Oh.
There is like comeuppances and things like that. Okay. So who is a couple of people who were known to have anting-antings? There was a Filipino hero called Macario Sakay. He had a vest that had religious images and Latin phrases to protect him from bullets. Former President Ferdinand Marcos.
Mm-hmm. What was his anting-anting?
He had an anting-anting that was given to him by Gregorio Aglipay from the Aglipay Church, Philippine Independent Church. And there was a piece of wood, kind of wood, I guess, that he implanted onto Marcos's back when he was a kid. Gregorio Aglipay is the godfather of Marcos.
Okay.
And it made him invisible.
Invisible?
Yeah, at will.
What?
Yeah. He said that the sliver of wood was inserted in his back before the Bataan campaign. Because remember, he said he was a war hero.
Mm.
And he was able to go in and out of camps and things like that because that anting-anting made him invisible. But you know what? No one saw you. So you could have just been lying.
Was he really a war hero?
He wasn't.
I remember I read the book where it was someone basically verified that even the medals were like not real. He just made them or something. Or
We're not getting into that. But earliest reports of Spanish accounts were Pardo de Tavera, talked about the, I'm not going to say it in Spanish, it's an amulet of supernatural power that saves lives.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the Christianization of the Philippines, the anting-anting was appropriated. So that's why it incorporated esoteric symbolisms from Freemasonry and religious aspects.
What do you call the necklace with the medallion that's like Mama Mary or something?
Stampita.
Stampita. Yes. And that's how they kind of treat it as well, right? Yes, kind of yes. Like an anting-anting. Like,
yeah.
Some people never remove
it. Yeah, when Ella was pregnant, every time Ella is pregnant, Paul, her husband, who's very religious, but also superstitious, makes her wear a stampita that she never takes off. Like even showering.
And swimming. Some people even wear the, because there's obviously the gold or silver version, but there's also a version that's string, right?
Yes.
And like letters. Like
or a leather thong.
Like a badge with like Christian
imagery.
Yeah, imagery.
Yeah.
Because I remember.
Or a book. Or a book. Or like, I had one as a kid when I, and sometimes it's given during rites. So like, I remember I received one for First Communion. And it was a booklet that I was not supposed to open. And it was in a plastic envelope. But I didn't wear it because it was itchy. So I didn't like it.
Okay.
Anyways, so there are different words for agimat. Or different, subcategories.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm interested in this one.
Okay. Kabal and kunat. Kabal and kunat. They go together. An agimat that is supposedly to make the skin invulnerable to cuts and slashes. Kabal is the aura of protection, like a shield that you get around your body. And the kunat is, it makes your skin impenetrable. Kunat is also the word of like when you have chicharon and you left it out too long.
Makunat.
Makunat, and it's not crunchy anymore. And it's hard to chew. Chewy.
But basically that means it's not brittle.
It's not brittle, or it's not, right. But it's also not penetrable.
Uh-huh.
There is an agimat or orashon.
Does kunat mean flexibility?
I don't think so. I think it means
like malleability. That's why you're not.
I guess. It doesn't bounce off, it just doesn't penetrate.
Sorry, again, we're not linguists.
We're not linguists. Right.
So there's one agimat for both.
Yes.
And basically, this is like if you're going to fight or something.
You're like a cop. Okay. This is from the Anting organization that was joined by Dennis Villanueva, who wrote You Shall Be as Gods, the Haring Bakal or King Metal. It's an organization, and that's the power that they have, the Kabal and Kunat.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So another type is Pamako. Pamako is orasyon, it's a prayer or an amulet that will nail down entities that keep them from moving. So, if you think there is a capre on your tree,
we talked about this, yeah.
Right? In your mango tree, and you don't want him to follow you around, you have a pamako, which is usually a nail, and then a prayer, the orasyon.
Because pako is basically nail. A nail.
Yeah, so you nail him down.
So, you nail a prayer, say, on the tree to keep the bad spirit in the tree.
But apparently, this also works for your enemies. So, if you want to keep, So, I read somewhere that, you know, there was this guy and he had a political opponent and he didn't want him to be able to come out of his house and campaign. So, he did a pamako spell on the guy's house. And the guy was still able to leave, but when he left, he felt like not great because the story says that his spirit was nailed to his house.
Oh, damn.
And then they found the nail, they took it out, and then he felt better. I don't know if the guy won the election or what.
That was not
the interesting part of the story for me, so I have no recall for it. Okay, this one is cool. This one might be the one that
is there an anting-anting to win elections?
No, because they're not, there's random anting-antings for luck in general, but it's really mostly protection.
It's mostly blockages, mm-hmm. barriers. Mm-hmm. To stop or impede things.
Disaster, bad things from happening to you. I don't know. I kind of like that. I kind of like that good things happen to you, you have to bring it into your own life, right? As long as you remove barriers.
Okay.
There's one called Tagabulag, which is an agimat that turns the wearer invisible against the enemy, or it blinds the enemy to you.
Like that sliver of wood that you're talking about.
Yes, in Mark.
Tagabulag.
Tagabulag. Bulag means?
Bulag means
blind. Tag aliwas is an agimat that supposedly deflects bullets. Ting, 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 ting. The kabal and kunat is mostly for knives and machetes.
Okay.
Okay. So what were the pre-colonial beliefs The antingiting is mostly a Tagalog word, by the way, and many still wear it to this day, as you
Sorry,
know.
Sorry, it's just funny that a lot of the charms are really linked with fighting.
Yes.
Like protection from like fighting or
yes.
war.
Yes. And some are like, no, this is cool. So it's not just fighting, but some antingating might take the form of crocodile's teeth. What are crocodile's teeth for? To protect you from crocodiles.
Ah.
Yeah. So
that's what Lam Ang made, right?
Yes.
Crocodile anting-anting.
Yes, to protect him from the crocodiles. There's also black diamonds or religious scapulars, of course. Peasant rebels during the revolutions, they had the bulletproof talismanic shirts. They had the shirts.
Bulletproof talismanic shirts.
Talismanic shirts. So not Kevlar, but Latin prayers.
I love that.
The Kevlar of that day.
Or who needs vibranium?
I know.
Latin prayers.
Yes. So this is interesting. On like why talismans were created, I think this is my anthropological assessment. It was really in Southeast Asian societies, it was because the personal possession of mystical power puts you in a position not just of wealth, but it gives you political success. So in pre-colonial Philippines, the village leader possesses magical powers as a bayani, a warrior, a chief or datu, or a shaman or bailan. The magical power, as well as wealth and social status, were acquired by the warrior through head-taking or slave raiding, the shaman through the spirit world, and the chiefs through both, right? And the importance is the talisman is like a physical manifestation of the invisible magic that these people have, right? So they're like concentrated forms of divine energy. So the more one accumulates, the more powerful they have. So they have to give these signs that indicate what kind of power they have. So chiefs have potent regalia in their homes like daggers, keris, like in Lam Ang, porcelain jars, magical instruments, and even people were agimats.
People?
Albinos.
Like oh, God.
And dwarves.
Oh, God.
So remember in The King and I, the albino elephant they were following? It's like that, but like people.
Oh, my God.
So if you have an albino as your like attendant, that's an agimat. That's a talisman for you. And this is my favorite one. Is music was also a nagimat or a talisman. So Malay soldiers would play the court gamelan. So gamelan, just for a background, I thought gamelan and kulintang was the same. In kulintang, it's like a xylophone.
But with little gongs.
Yeah, little gongs. And we used to play it in the Philippines. And in La Salle, where Brian teaches, they have a gamelan room. And I said, a gamelan is a kulintang. Apparently, a kulintang is one instrument of the gamelan. The gamelan is like seeing an orchestra.
Ah, okay. Yes. Interesting.
So they would play, and the gamelan has the kulintang. It has gongs. It has drums. It has like a smaller a xylophone. And they play it. In Subanon epic, the heroes beat their gamelan gongs to destroy the enemy ships. So I thought that was like really cool. It's like there's a soundtrack to your sea battle. The earliest ever recording of gamelan music that I think if we have time, we could insert into this episode.
Can we play it here?
We can play it. We can insert it here.
Okay, so if it's here, give it a listen.
Not on a boat. Not on your boat. But give it a listen.
Yeah.
Right here. So what we're going to listen to is the Ketchak song by the Ketchak group from the album Music for the Gods. The Fahenstock South Sea Expedition in Indonesia. It was actually recorded in 1941. You can find it on YouTube. It was licensed by the Orchard Music Company on behalf of the Smithsonian Folkways Mickey Hart Collection, and you can find the link in the description notes of this episode.
Ah!
that.
We hope you liked it. That was so cool. I hope we didn't sink any ships. So this is another interesting...
But that's so cool. So basically, for you to showcase your power, you have to surround yourself with the objects of power.
Yes.
Or like, basically things to scare everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, this statue has like...
Yeah, yeah.
Five and albinos.
I know. And like 20 dwarves. Dwarves were also a thing.
Oh my god.
I think it's cool because they're not like freaks. They're power. Diba? I think, I don't know. Because it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much of, I'm so rich, I own albinos. But this is a manifestation of my power. So this is another cool aspect that I did not know about. So in Pan-Malayan beliefs, the most potent talisman gives off light and makes their owners appear radiant.
Ooh.
Radiant? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Right? Like the saints are depicted with halos of radiance because heroes and heroines shine like the sun. And they live in golden mansions. They wear luminous weapons and wear resplendent gold and jewelry. And the gold, that's why gold is a preeminent material for artisans and a paramount symbol of talismanic power. And like you mentioned in the Mami Mia episode, the dead journey to the spirit world arrayed in gold applique and gold jewelry with gold masks. Because the gold itself has transformative powers.
Ah.
Turn them into gods. Turn them into heroes. And speaking of gold, in the Manobo epic, a gold betel nut, which the Babaylan feeds her people, makes them immortals. She got a gold betel nut and she fed them. And then they all ascended to the sky world in a magical airboat.
I'm surprised that there's not more, but maybe this is so that it's relatable, but I'm surprised there's not more like talismans that are like precious metal or precious stones. Like it feels a bit more down to earth.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, that's why talismans can be made from different things. So like that, you know,
Mugia, like a talisman, like anyone can have a talisman.
Anyone can make a talisman if you are a person of power, if you ask for it humbly. Mm-hmm. And
witch doctors.
Of a witch doctor of in modern day, and this is a little bit, this is an aside and a later on, but in the book, You Shall Be As Gods, I started reading it, but in the latter parts, I sort of lost my taste for it because he went to different organizations that had agimats, and they were usually cults. There was usually smaller pseudo-Catholic cults, like I won't name names, but pseudo-Catholic cults. And the way that he would talk about their interactions was as if, so I talked to this crazy lady. And then she said, why are you here? And I said, I really admire their group. He didn't. He thought that they were ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, okay, I believe you. You are now blessed. Here is your talisman.
Mm-hmm.
So I really did not like that portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
He did really great research and, you know, Denis Villanueva, if you're here, and I, my perception was wrong, that might have been just my context, but it seems as if a normal person can get a talisman. In much the same way as like Wang Od, the Mamba Batok, or tattoo artist of the headhunting tribes. She will give you a tattoo if you journey to her, if you prove her your merits, not just as a headhunter.
How?
So I have a friend, she runs the Cali Martial Arts School here in Singapore with her partners. And she got, because she said she started a martial arts school for Philippine martial arts in Singapore. And she taught many students. And she propagated the culture. And that is a mark of a warrior. And so Wang Od gave her a tattoo.
It's like a job interview.
It is. But instead of a job, you get a painful tattoo.
Or like
a magical amulet.
Award application.
Yes. Award application. Okay. So moving back, I was talking about this a while ago. Different things can be agimat. So the concept of, let's say, potency or power, right? So like gold is divine. Potency or power in war is expressed by brightly colored things like the flame tree, the red gumamela or red hibiscus, and rooster plumage that is actually worn by a Kalinga warrior, as I mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
So another tribe is the Ilonggo. They have a headdress made of hornbills. skulls and beaks.
So when you see like potency in nature,
yes,
then you associate that with like divine
or power,
mystical power.
Yes, warlike power. So like magenta headscarves of the Bagobo, Mandaya, Bilaan, Bukidnon. So it's not just necessarily the radiance of gold, but the glow of fire that shows the warrior's prowess. Mm. Another illustration of the potency of the agimat is the gahum and usbong. Gahum is magical potency. Usbong, which also means sprout, means aura or charisma.
Ew.
If you have a lot of charisma and have a good aura that you radiate through your just your energy, but also in the heat of your body, if you have a strong pulse on your fingertips, and if your eyes are nanlilisik, like a
piercing,
it means your talisman is very strong. Or you're a psychopath. I don't know. Because you know, some people who make like excessive eye contact,
I know,
are psychopaths. And then there's, and then you can see a lot of the parallelisms, right, of talisman to Catholicism. So verses of Christ on Mount Tabor having divine promise because of his radiance is similar to angels and saints wearing dazzling brocade in churches. I mean, like, these saints did not wear gold or have, like, jewels.
No.
But in church, they have all gold everything. And in Pampanga, in Tarlac, when the saints get paraded, they have new golden clothes,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
New golden and silver.
Just every Holy Week, if it, for those who aren't familiar with it, right? So every Holy Week, there would be like a procession around town, basically. So you would bring out all of these like statues and icons of the saints and of, you know, Jesus and Mary, and you would basically parade them around town.
Yes.
And there would be, they would have their like regular clothes, and then on special occasions,
like Holy Week,
yeah, they would have very special raiments that are usually like gold brocade or whatever. That's funny.
Because it harkens to that.
Yeah.
I don't know that they have it in other countries.
And you have to bring them along in floats that are like
gold.
You know, full of lights and then fresh flowers and stuff like
fresh
that.
Fresh candles, you know. So, okay. So, there are these great scenes in the epics. It's not just, so it's not just the thing itself, right? So, the anting-anting is not just the thing itself, but the rites and the ceremonies around it. So, let's say the talisman is for war, right? For prowess. So, when they are dressed, there is a formulaic scene. So there's a hero's physical prowess, and it will be enhanced by their clothing, their ornament and armament. And then it illustrates these ideas. So the example, Biag Nilamang, the Highland epic, it's meant to show that the warrior is not just beautiful, but is also magical. And they are not merely descriptive. They evoke objects that the spoken word makes magically powerful. That's why there's also repetition. Remember you were saying before there's repetition?
Yes.
Because it emphasizes power. So,
and Biag and Lamang had, we featured him in our previous episode, right? He had like so many magical animals who were really his talismans, weren't they? And his source of power.
Mm-hmm.
They saved him during his fights. They got him the girl.
Yeah.
They saved his life. So when he died, they helped him resurrect.
So there is a chant of a Kalinga that they say during the dressing of a warrior.
Ah, okay.
The Kalinga, by the way, were called the peacocks of the mountain because of their elaborate clothing and ornaments. So I'll read a little bit of it. Lo, Kanu was the warrior. He put on his rich apparel, his finest wearings. All of them he put on, then they enumerate, scales of the crocodile, a tuft of yellow plumes. How fear-inspiring he is now. All of them he did tuck in, green feathers of the Kulasisi birds, the nacre disc of cicada wings. How fear-inspiring he now was. Lo, Kanu, he took his kumbawa shield, his finger-cursing spear, his sharpened axe, and then it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They keep on saying, the refrain is, how fear-inspiring he was.
Ooh.
He now was. Because it's meant to terrify the enemies as well as to impress them with his wealth and soul.
Because you don't want to fight someone who's rich?
Yes. Bana, who was a Kalinga hero is of beauty exquisite, but also a terrible crocodile because he had frightening tattoos all over his chest that made him look like a crocodile. In fact, the Kalinga call themselves the Buaya, the crocodile people, because it's scary and it inspires fear.
You know what this makes me imagine? Like, if you've ever watched Sailor Moon.
Yes!
As a kid, right? That iconic magical girl transformation sequence. And then she goes, Moon, prism, power, makeup. Her, like, her talisman is like a makeup set.
A compact?
Yeah, a compact that has like a crystal or whatever.
And a pen?
Yeah. And then the others are like pens or something like that.
And Akazuken Chacha. And Akazuken Chacha, it's crystal aurora bracelet. Crescent aurora bracelet.
But and so what I would like to see is a transformation sequence of a Kalinga warrior.
Yes.
Right? Putting in all of these armaments, magical anime style.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
But to your point also, there's so many scenes like this. There's Lamang, but also in the south, in the Sulob Lubao Dongon epic of the south.
Yes, Lubao Dongon.
Yes, they have that also. So why, how is it similar? And the anthropological hypothesis is because of the Indian influence through Malaysia. The Indian-derived Malay epic of Sri Rama. Mm-hmm. In the Ramayana, mm-hmm. where there was a portion of the hero wore trousers of ancient fabric of thousands of spangles around waist and feet, a waistband which changes from purple to gold, a velvet coat of glowing crimson, a kerchief full of love charms and enchantments woven by his mother in her girlhood. Super specific.
Wow.
And a seven-waved kris burnished with scented water. And that actually reminded me.
So a seven wave, like a wavy sword, basically.
A wavy sword, a kris, yes. So it actually reminded me, if it reminded you of Sailor Moon, it reminded me of something, and let's see if you can guess. An apple for serenity, a pendant for balance.
Mulan!
Beads of jade for beauty. You must proudly show it. Now add a cricket.
Just for luck.
And even you can't blow it. So there's so many. I think it's really cool. I think it's just like very.
I don't know if it's necessarily an Indian influence in that. Because I don't like the implication that before the Indian influence came, we had no such practice.
That's fair.
Right?
We probably did.
Yeah.
I think it's that practice of the dressing of the warrior as like talismanic charms. But then I'm sure people were painting themselves like crocodiles.
And it's like
way before the Indian
kind of like it's your way of like meditation and mentally preparing for battle, right?
Yeah.
So you're not focusing on, oh my god, what's gonna be the outcome, etc. You kind of again like put your intention on, you know, I'm putting on things that will remind me of my strength.
Yes.
And remind me that I'm protected.
And I take the strength of my ancestors.
Exactly.
Okay. So that ends the portion on pre-colonial talismans.
Wait, I never heard about who learns how to make them.
Ah, the babaylan and the lords.
How do you come up with the potions? Can you invent your own kind?
So Jaime Licalco, who is an occultist, famous occultist in the Philippines. He hypothesizes that there was not a lot of records on the how, mostly oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But from his hypothesis, it is people would imitate nature habits
mm-hmm.
to make the thing that they need from the talisman. So for example, the talisman and the spell for making it rain was getting sacred water and sprinkling it on your land.
Okay.
And that invoking that. In much the same way as plumage that evoked me being covered in blood because I'm such a great warrior is what I wear so that I would be a good warrior. And so it's usually people who are imbued by the spirit, like the shamans, the babaylans, but also great leaders. Great leaders don't necessarily make the talismans.
Okay.
But objects that they had used in battle become talismans.
Okay.
or, you know, I died wearing this armor. In much the same way as, like, remember we were talking about in Inaginid, where they would take the blood of their enemies and smear it across the prows of the boat.
Uh-huh.
That is a talisman also.
Uh-huh.
And that wasn't necessarily made by one certain person. But I think it's really more of like, what do you want? It's like manifestation.
Mm.
So it's not one specific rite. I think every tribe has a specific rite for a specific talisman. The times of the day that you can make it, the times. But there's no like hard and fast rule.
I guess part of it being such a natural process means that part of it needs to be intuitive.
Yeah.
Like what feels right given what's around you.
Yeah, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have hornbill skulls, what's the next scariest animal that you can use? You know, if you don't have crocodile teeth, can you use shark teeth?
Mm-hmm.
And things like that.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
And people even use like plants that look like plants that look like the thing. So if you want a gayuma, you get a leaf that's shaped like a heart. So there you have it. That was part one. We tackled, you know, definitions, classifications of talismans and up to pre-colonial beliefs. Next time, we'll be diving deep into the colonial beliefs until modern day. So stay tuned.
We hope you liked it. Lots more exciting topics and episodes coming soon. As always, you can reach us at Instagram at godsmithbegracie.pod. If you are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a rating.
A review.
Or just share it with your friends.
We have some really great reviews.
We have some very interesting reviews that we've read so far. But we love hearing from you guys. And have a great day.
Have a magical, magical day.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Happy Holy Week.